grass-fed, locally raised, 100% organic. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the 420 edition, a Wednesday. I am joined right now, live via phone, by my favorite congressman, Mark Pocan, Pocan from the great state of Wisconsin. I know your name. Welcome back, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You know, Mark, 420, I got a little live event after this interview, sneaking downtown to one of our fine sponsors. But I got to tell you, Mark, it's hard to celebrate the 420 the way I'd like to, because the state of Wisconsin is a prohibitionist state. Mark, let's just start with your thoughts on legalizing marijuana, sir.
I think it's a no-brainer, right? We should be there. We did pass the bill in the House that finally went forward around a number of issues around marijuana. It makes no sense that, you know, we still have marijuana Schedule One drug, that you can't put money from your legal marijuana business into the bank when so many states have either legal marijuana or legal medical marijuana. And yet you're right, Wisconsin's a real outlier even nationally compared to so many other states.
And Mark, we know the opinion of the people of the great state of Wisconsin, of the American people. This is not their will. They don't want prohibition going on in their state. They'd at least like to see some sort of legalized medical applications. Mark, do you see any possibility of passage through the U.S. Senate of this House pass piece?
You know, I'll tell you, I never predict anything through the Senate given their antiquated use of the filibuster, right? So, you know, a majority isn't a majority only in the U.S. Senate. But, you know, I think even in Wisconsin, the path forward continues to be around public support. And we know the public support is there. I'm a big believer of if the people lead, eventually the leaders will follow. And right now the leaders aren't following. But I think if we put enough public pressure on, we will get to a point of sanity even here in Wisconsin.
Mark, we saw a Trump-appointed judge roll back the mask mandate. And that's not the will of the American people. Near as I can tell, polling's at least 2-1. In favor of continuing mask mandates on airplanes, on mass transit. Mark, were you surprised by the ruling, the appeal coming from the Biden administration? Where do you think we should be as a nation on mask mandates?
So, I mean, this is a one where this is a federal judge that should never have been a federal judge. Yet, of course, Ron Johnson supported her, which is the case of someone who had never been a judge, who had never done a trial, who was a corporate attorney, who essentially family were donors within the Republican Party, and got appointed. And even the American Bar Association said she wasn't qualified, which they don't say on that many people that make it that far. So, you know, to begin with, you had a very inexperienced, maybe not the most intellectually curious federal judge make that ruling. But I think, you know, the broader issue is, you know, we are in this weird transition period, right? We're kind of at the end of COVID, but maybe not quite. We don't tell COVID what to do. It tells us, yet everyone seems to think they're going to tell COVID what to do. You know, it's going to be more and more about people's comfort levels. I know when I fly, I'm going to wear a mask because it's, in my opinion, the smart thing to do. But it is a weird point that we're at in the pandemic.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I've got my fine congressman, Mark Pocan, from the great state of Wisconsin, on the line. We've got him till the bottom of the hour, or whatever, top of the hour. I can't keep a track. Mark, your brother wanted to be a federal judge, and there was an appointment that was supported by both the Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin and the Republican Senator Ron Johnson in the state, until it was time where the rubber hit the road and Biden tried to make the appointment in the Green Bay District. Your brother should have been Justice Pocan. He is a state court judge, I believe, currently, Mark. You probably know better than I. But I want to get your reaction to Ron Johnson specifically blocking your brother's nomination after he supported him for the role prior.
Yeah, well, this is classic Rojo, right? He was for him before he was against him. He and Tammy Baldwin put four names forward that they recommended that went through a review panel they jointly had folks on. and the president picked from the list they jointly put out there. The only difference that occurred is Ron Johnson announced he was running for re-election and decided that he was going to try to somehow use this to help with the base. And the only thing that we can really come up with is the only thing, you know, he knew my brother was the deputy chief in Milwaukee County. His argument about the bail case is completely bogus. Everyone has said that. Even I think he would admit it at the end of the day. But, you know, my brother is married to another man. And I think, you know, a lot of us think this is more about pleasing his base by turning this down. And, you know, this is one of the reasons that Senator Durbin said that they might overrule the blue slip rules, that they, again, another antiquated rule they follow in the Senate, if they thought there was discrimination based on religion, gender, race, or sexual orientation, that they might give up on the rule. So it's not done yet. The president's still very committed to, you know, having someone who got unanimous support by the bar, the national bar, saying he was well qualified, which, again, that's pretty difficult to get every single person who does the review to say that. But Ron Johnson's not for that person, but supported the person who, you know, the bar even said wasn't qualified. Yeah, this is just Rojo. He's as political as they come. There's no consistency. There's not a lot of thought that a lot of people can see. And it's unfortunate that he's being this petty, that he would, you know, try to appeal to, you know, the uglier elements of the Republican Party by, you know, being homophobic.
Well, Mark, you stole my thunder. I was going to ask you if you thought Rojo was just being frickin' petty, and perhaps he is. Mark Pocan, my fine guest, live via phone until 4 o'clock. Mark, wanted to ask you, I've seen a recent advocacy for taxing the rich, and I don't think you're new to this party. I think you felt that way for a long time. But let's talk about why now and what your specific advocacy would be for.
I'm sorry, can you say that again? I missed the question. I apologize.
Tax the rich. Why now? And what specifically would you be for, Mark?
So a number of things. I mean, I think, you know, one, we should get rid of the tax cuts for the ultra wealthy that Donald Trump and Paul Ryan and others passed. Clearly, you know, I think something like 85-86% of the money goes ultimately to the top 1%. That's something that should go away. I think we should be taxing, you know, the people who make more at higher rates. And there's a number of proposals to do that. But I also think we need to have essentially a billionaire tax. And I think the president's proposal is one of the more unique that I think I'm most intrigued by, which is, you know, there's so many ways that rich people don't pay taxes like the rest of us, especially as a percent of their income. And they have these extra, you know, ways to avoid paying their fair share. The president's saying, fine, if we can't get rid of all these individual loopholes, let's at least say they should be paying at least 20%, and no matter what, they're going to pay that. So essentially, they can play the game with lots of accountants and lawyers, but at the end of the day, they're still going to pay something that's closer to what real people pay as a percent of their income. I think that's a smart proposal, and I hope that, you know, as a Congress, we can try to bring some tax fairness because, you know, as of Monday, a lot of people paid a good percent of their income in on taxes as responsible citizens. And yet almost every billionaire and most every millionaire didn't pay their fair share.
And some of us extended, Mark. Let me ask you about gouging. We hear all the time, you know, the inflation is rampant and it's all Joe Biden's fault. But I also notice that corporate profits are rampant, and it's back to back the two most profitable quarters in America's history. Well, you wonder what the inflation rate is. It basically mirrors the increase in corporate profits, Mark. Corporations are currently paying like 5.5% of the total tax burden of the United States. So when, you know, we hear our friends that said they were taxed enough already, well, the entire middle class feels taxed enough already, Mark. But how do we make corporations pay a fairer share as a percentage, as a, you know, I mean, there's so many corporations that don't even owe federal taxes due to, you know, depletion, loopholes, whatever the case may be. Mark, no one feels that that's a fair policy. How do the Democrats or, you know, government in general, how do we deliver fairness in tax policy?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is, you know, the companies that hide their profits overseas so they don't have to pay taxes. So money that they've made here in the U.S., they claim that maybe their business logo is owned by an Irish entity where taxes are very low, and suddenly that logo is a huge portion of the sale. So they take those profits, shift it to a country where they don't pay very much in taxes, and they game the system. I mean, that's one of the main things I think we need to go after, or companies that, you know, essentially get paid, incentivized to send jobs overseas. But, you know, there's a really good book I just read called Tax the Rich by Morris Pearl. Morris Pearl is, I think, the president of the Patriotic Millionaires Group. This is a bunch of millionaires who've said, hey, we should be taxed more. And they, in a really simple way, break down both personal and corporate tax loopholes and dodges that people take advantage of most commonly. And it's a great book because it really does explain all the various ways they get special privileges compared to real people. We need to go after those. We need to plug those holes. And we need to make sure that corporations actually pay their fair share.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I am talking to Mark Pocan, my fine congressman, great state of Wisconsin. You know him. You love him just like we do. Mark, I want to ask you about specifically U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. He was the lone holdout Republican when it was time to pass the so-called Trump tax cuts. And what he was holding out for was a reduction in the tax rate for designated S corporations. Now, Mark, outside of politics, you own a small business. I own a small business. Ron came down to my former Milwaukee studios and said, oh, Crudy, I did this for the little guys like you and I. And by assumption, I suppose you, Congressman. But he also benefited from that from a couple of his donors. I mean, they got a whopper of a tax cut, Mark. Depending on whose reporting you believe, it's between $80 million and $218 million that two families benefited in one singular tax filing year from this one reduction in taxation. And they kicked back like $21 million to Ron. So, you know, not a bad investment in a U.S. senator, all things considered. Mark, what was your thoughts on how Ron sort of handled that whole, you know, self-benefiting tax cut?
Corrupt, right? I mean, I think what people hate the most about politicians who game the system for themselves are exactly things like Ron Johnson did. So for himself and for his wealthiest donors, people who put a lot of money into Republican campaigns, he found a tax rule that won't benefit the average person whatsoever. And he will make sure that there's a way that they all profit. And to me, that's outright corruption. And, you know, we need to call him out at every turn. He's even, you know, admitted some of the process around this. But, you know, if I put something in place for, you know, bald-headed magicians and I got a special tax cut, I think people might look at it as maybe a corrupt action. In his case, he took care of himself and some of his wealthiest donors. And I think the only way, the thing you can call it, is corruption.
Now, Mark, I've asked him specifically about that tax cut, you know, post facto, and he's still bragging about it. He's still proud of it. He says, you know, lots of American businesses got tax cuts. But Mark, is it enough to say, well, you know, I gave crumbs to the masses, but, you know, there are a few very special beneficiaries of this tax policy. That's the way it's always worked in this country, isn't it, Mark?
No, I mean, the whole idea behind taxation, and people know this, it doesn't take a whole lot to look at how we do it. It's usually progressive, right? The more money you make, the more you should pay in. That's the system. The problem is people figure out ways to game the system, and Ron Johnson figured out a way to game the system. He can claim that's clever or smart. I call it what I think most people call it, corrupt. And I think, you know, we need to just be as blunt as that. We have a senator who took advantage of his office to make sure he and other wealthy people who give money to him and other Republicans benefited the most. And I would say 99.9% of his constituents did not benefit anywhere close to those, that handful of people that did. So when he claims he did something for the common good, the common good was his bank account and a few other people.
Mark Pocan, stick around for the common good. More with my congressman, Mark Pocan, next.
If you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal. Hey, hey.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. My fine guest is kind of a big deal. He is Mark Pocan, my congressman from the great state of Wisconsin. Mark, thanks for sticking around. Appreciate the generosity of your time, sir.
Of course.
Want to ask you about what's going on in Florida. Ron DeSantis has signed off on a don't say gay bill, as it's been described in the media. It's part of the cultural wars, obviously, Mark. I think it shows a real lack of governance policy. I mean, they don't really have a plan for governance, Mark, so they've got to throw gasoline on the cultural wars fire. But this particular attack, I want to get your interpretation, Mark. I know that you have a husband, and I know your husband. I know you guys, and I would just wonder, Mark, it's got to feel personally offensive on some level.
Well, you know, it's interesting that they're going back to this issue because, you know, if you look a little history of it, Wisconsin was the first state in the country back in 1982 and 1983 to pass civil rights bills for the gay and lesbian community. At the time, it didn't include the trans community. But in 1982, that bill was signed by a Republican governor, Lee Sherman Dreyfus. Fast forward to the Republicans decide to weaponize this issue. It works well with, you know, an element of their base that likes to be afraid of people. And because of that, we fought through a lot of years of a lot of attacks. And then they always overplay their hand, got to the point that there's marriage equality. And then the majority of people in the country, a strong majority, support marriage equality. What's odd is they're going back to the issue by going after trans kids or others in Florida and Texas, simply again to appeal to the base. And I think that rose out of Donald Trump, you know, really playing so hard to the most extreme elements that everyone has to play hard to those elements. And Ron DeSantis, you know, wants to be president more than anything in life. And he got this bill passed. And unfortunately, you know, he's doing it at the expense of a lot of kids who, you know, are going to wind up committing suicide and having a hard time in school and at home. Also, he can maybe someday be the Republican nominee for president. So, you know, it's done for all the wrong reasons. I think most people, again, see it at that. But it's awful that they've resurrected this level of hate. And I think it will ultimately backfire.
Mark, how do you think we as Democrats, and I think a lot about the messaging of the Democratic Party or the left, if you will, how do you think we should respond to these sort of cultural war attacks? I played some of the sound of that young lady, the young Democratic senator from Michigan, McMurrow.
I thought she did a great job by saying, look, a transgender kid doesn't make our roads in crappy shape, right? That's legislators who don't put money to things. So, you know, transgender kids don't make it that we have a teacher shortage problem. Transgender kids don't make it that you don't have health care, right? And I thought she did such an exceptional job by taking it head on. Don't let the Republicans take an inch on these issues. They're doing it for all the wrong reasons. And ultimately, I really do believe people will do the right thing when given the right information. But that means Democrats have to have the spine and fortitude to stand up for what's right.
Mark, was that the problem after Obamacare passed and we saw the quote-unquote wave election of 2010? Do you think Democrats, and I know you were in the state assembly then, Mark, but do you think Democrats ran away from Obamacare, ran away from their policies, ran away from their own advocacy to a certain degree? And I feel like it's being replayed in slow motion, like Democrats running away from the policies of Joe Biden. Want to get your thoughts, Mark.
You know, I could give you a half hour on this, but let me say it this way. I think what ultimately happens is, you know, one, Republicans talk in headlines and Democrats talk in paragraphs. Republicans get their messaging across, I think, better than Democrats often do. But secondly, is we're afraid because some special interest that's funding campaigns, probably funding both sides, then doesn't like something, and then we're afraid to displease them because ultimately we also need that funding in campaigns. And it really goes back to some of the fundamentals. If we have a campaign finance system like we have, we're going to continue to often make weaselly decisions about good decisions we made legislatively. And I think that happens all too often. Fundamentally, we need to make some core changes around things like gerrymandering and campaign finance, because if we don't, there are some real big new threats that are coming that I think could derail our democracy. I mean, just one example is, you know, there's these outside, super PACs. There's a new one out there that a billionaire is putting at least $1 million into every race in the primary of where he endorses. $1 million is a lot of money when raising it for a campaign and in a primary. And, you know, once that starts, other billionaires see that, that's going to follow, and eventually it's going to be a race among who is favored by which billionaire. We've got some real threats out there, and I think sometimes, you know, when some of those threats don't like, you know, the issues that we do, we don't stand with the very smart decisions that we made that actually benefit real people.
Mark, I heard a little promo. Doug LaFollette appeared on this show just a few short weeks ago. He is the long-term, and I mean really long-term, Secretary of State of the great state of Wisconsin. Sort of a dignitary role at this late hour, but Republicans would like to change all that. If they could win that office, they'd love to push through more electoral malfeasance. But here's my question, Mark. My understanding, the Associated Press is reporting that an Alexa Sabor is going to primary Doug LaFollette. And want to get your interpretation, Mark. This feels a little bit like blue-on-blue violence to me. What do you feel like, sir?
You know, I haven't seen that, so it's a little harder to comment on it. I don't know where they're running from or what the issues are, so I don't know if I'm the best place to say that. I always think anyone should be able to run for anything, and ultimately, you know, debate of ideas is a good thing. But I do think if you take resources away from some of these important fights, that also can be a problem. But I don't know enough, honestly, to give you a fair answer.
Okay, fair enough, Congressman. There's already, you know, talk afoot about perhaps primarying Joe Biden. Mark, is that ever appropriate to primary the incumbent president if he's on your team?
You know, I mean, we've seen that happen previously, right? People like Ted Kennedy and Jimmy Carter and others. You know, if the person's not doing the job, again, I think people have a right to do that. I don't think that's true of Joe Biden. Everyone blames him for inflation on the Republican side. Well, there's inflation in France. There's inflation in Australia. There's inflation in South Africa. Are we going to say that somehow Joe Biden's responsible for all of that? Well, I guess they probably would. But, you know, it tells you how incredible that argument is. You know, I've been impressed. I mean, Joe Biden has done more than I expected as a strong Bernie Sanders supporter. He has done a lot of good things, and I would be surprised if there was a meaningful primary.
Well, Mark, I agree with you completely, sir, at least on this topic, politics mostly. Mark Pocan, my good friend and fine congressman. Mark, really appreciate you coming around today.
Hey, of course, anytime. Love to.
All right. Happy 420 to you, Congressman. My best to your husband. More Devil's Advocates. I'm hitting the road. I'm going to Knuckleheads. You can join me there. 520 State Street, Madison, Wisconsin. Celebrating the 420 holiday with some great deals.